Hi, welcome to Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, your monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. And I'm Sandy Harper, your host, but here I have a new co-host today because Dick is in Juneau rehearsing Mice and Men. And this is a dear old friend, wonderful storyteller, and now a colleague with your new job as artistic director of Out North, right, Jack?
Yes. So Jack Dalton here. Hello, and it's really great to be here. I'm honored that you invited me to be your co-host.
And we are hosting Frank Nosek of the Czechoslovakian Society and another old friend and also colleague, Wayne Bergler. And so you guys, tell us about what you have coming up. It's a very special celebration and a special birthday.
Well, that it is, Sandy. The Czechs have always been quite proud of contributions that country has made to the sciences and the arts. And several years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, the Czech embassy in the United States began a program sponsored by the Foreign Ministry of the Czech Republic. But the program was to celebrate significant contributors from either the former Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic to the arts or statesmanship or science. So this is their third year. I think the first year, the celebration was focused on Tomáš Masaryk. Tomáš Masaryk was the first president of Czechoslovakia, which is a country that was created in 1921 after World War II. And Masaryk was a very, very close friend of our President Wilson. And he spent a good deal of time in the U.S., actually married a lovely U.S. lady by the name of, last name of Garrigues, whose name he took as his middle name. So his name ended up being Tomáš Garrigues Masaryk. And he was the first elected president of the new country of Czechoslovakia, which he had promoted very, very diligently to our U.S. President Wilson. And President Wilson then went to bat with the powers that were restructuring Europe after World War II and ended up combining the two areas which had both formerly been under the Austrian-Hungarian Empire for 300 years.
What was it referred to during that period?
Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Okay. I always heard, you know, the voters were always shifting at that period.
There were no voters in those days. It was one or two kings and made all the decisions.
The borders always shifted.
The borders, you know, are interesting between the Czech lands and the Slovak lands because while politicians did shift borders as they felt it served their ends, the two tribes are both Slovak tribes, a language very similar and a lot of things in common, not only geography, but they kind of knew where the border was all the time. Mm. And that served them in good stead later because Czechoslovakia, while it became kind of the dominant democrat country in Central Europe because they adopted a constitution very similar to the U.S. Constitution. And so they were the seventh largest economy in Central Europe all the way up from the time of their creation, 1921, till 1938. The last president then who had succeeded Tomáš Masaryk was Edward Beneš. And then Neville Chamberlain, who was the prime minister of Great Britain, as you recall, said to Adolf Hitler, "All right, but this is your last country. You can't invade any more countries." And Adolf Hitler said, "Okay, just let me go into the Czechoslovakia and I won't take any other countries." And so they let him do that. So in 1939, the Nazis took over Czechoslovakia. And occupied until the end of the war, 1945, and then as the Czechoslovakia was trying to recapture its democratic government and flavors, the communists came into the country, and they took control. I mean, I think everybody in the U.S. knows that story about General Patton, who was with his tanks and army heading towards the liberation of Prague in 1945 when a deal was struck in Yalta, the Yalta Conference, between the British, the Russians, and the U.S. And Eisenhower, who was in charge of that theater of war at the time, said to Patton, "Stop in Pilsen. Don't go into Prague. Leave that for the Russians." And that was the start of the Russians in the communist era in the Czech lands. You've all had Pilsner beer, I'm sure. Pilsen is the town. And to this day, they still celebrate their liberation with a big summertime parade with U.S. jeeps, uniforms, tanks, whatever they can find. They're very proud of the fact that Patton liberated them. In any event, to get to this sort of velvet divorce, the communist government was an oppressive type of government, and it was in rigid control of Czechoslovakia until late in 1989, when the government began to crumble. There were dissidents in the Czech lands who were reacting against the communists and their form of government. And one of the leaders was Václav Havel, whom most of you have heard about. He was a great playwright.
Because the Czechoslovakia nominated and elected a writer to be their leader.
Yes, he was a wonderful poet as well as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's put on a number of plays, lots of short plays, as a matter of fact.
Very famous. And actually, I read where he and Miloš Forman were students together at one point.
They actually had a play that they wanted to produce. It didn't get produced, I don't think, at least to my knowledge, but they were going to collaborate on that. They were about the same age. Miloš Forman was much healthier than Václav Havel. Václav Havel loved to smoke cigarettes, and eventually that was the downfall for him. But he was a great man, an inspirational leader, and exactly the right thing for that part of the world when the communist government changed. And he became the first president of the new Czechoslovakia. But there were politics between the Czechs and Slovaks. And while they called that change of government the Velvet Revolution, because there wasn't a gunshot fired, there were simply silent, peaceful protests, and the communists went out the back door, and in came the democratic regime. But 3 years later, in 1993, the Slovaks wanted their own government. There was really a kind of a competition between one of the Slovak leaders and President Havel for leadership. And so that led to what I think some of the people now call the Velvet Divorce. That's where the two countries split. And that was a peaceful split because they knew the boundaries.
Mm.
That comment I made to you a little bit earlier, Sandy, so there was no disputing over the boundaries, and they split up who got the flag and who got the currency, some of the other things, and they became two different countries, the Slovak Republic, the Czech Republic, and but they both enjoyed quite a bit of success since. The Czech Republic's bigger in terms of population, certainly, and it has the big, gorgeous city of Prague within it.
How was it that Prague was spared? I understand that it's considered one of the miracles of World War II.
I wish I knew the exact story of that, but I mean, I know the story of it being spared, and it was for the most part spared. There were a few bombs dropped, and there were some, there was some damage, but you couldn't tell. There was far more damage done by neglect during the communist years than there ever was done during World War II during the bombing years. I mean, for years, the communist government, they knew the Czechs loved that city. They loved the architecture, and that they wouldn't stand still very long if all of that gorgeous structuring was neglected. So the communists would adopted a system of putting up scaffolding in front of these gorgeous buildings to make it appear as though work was being done. The only work that was being done was on the little elevators that went up and down that carried workmen. Those were KGB spies spying on people walking around, seeing where they were going, who they were talking to. They never did any revitalization. Those buildings at all occurred after the communists left, and the Czechs have now done a wonderful job. So,
it is a popular destination, and it's many people's bucket list to go to Prague.
It's a wonderfully popular destination. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of English spoken, so it isn't a language problem. The Americans are especially welcome because they have been such a great friend to the Czech Republic. So I think that there's going to be more and more visitation between the U.S. and the Czech Republic. They have some wonderful school systems, and there are graduate programs and undergraduate programs now in the colleges, exchanging students with the major universities in the Czech Republic. So there's, and actually, interestingly enough, there are a lot of Czech students who take advantage of the J-1 student visa program that the United States offers to foreign students. And generally, as a rule, we have several hundred of those students employed in the state of Alaska. Granted, they're out in the fish camps and doing that kind of work, but some are in the restaurants in Anchorage, and quite a few are working up at Denali Park in the lodge and other facilities up there.
So is the Alaska Czech Society engaged in welcoming these students and helping them find
work? We don't really have that much interaction with them. You know, the Czech Alaska Society is a charitable organization. A charitable society is created probably about 7 years ago by the Czech community in Alaska for the purpose of carrying on their heritage and their traditions and providing associations among themselves. But these students are, under that J-1 program, they are allowed to come to the United States and legally work for 3 months, and then they can spend two more months traveling. And that's the advantage to them. The amount of money that they can make, given the exchange differences between the currencies in the Czech Republic and the U.S., is it's substantial. And so a young kiddo who's been working up here in our remote camps can go back to their homeland in the Czech Republic, and they have enough money to either pay for their college, maybe buy their folks a house. I mean, it's just
an
enormous
fantastic
benefit for them.
And, of course, it deepens the friendship between Alaska.
The exact idea, Sandy, the exact idea behind that program, and it works wonderfully. So they're all fluent in English, and there is a fair amount of friendship created. I mean, there are that many young people, there are going to be some marriages, and there are. And so those things are ongoing adventures in the summer up here. So, but the Czech Alaska Society, excuse me, Jack, just to finish that thought, is a co-sponsor of this celebration event that's going on. And this celebration event, as I say, had Tomas Masaryk as their first prominent celebratory first personality that they, and their second one, the composer Dvorak. Oh. Was the second one last year. And this year, Miloš Forman.
Yes. So, what a lovely choice.
Yes. I don't know where they're going next, but those have been three good choices.
Well, yeah, and that's what I wanted to bring up. Some people might be asking themselves, well, what do I know about Czech culture and arts? They knew from news Václav Havel, but I think what a lot of people don't understand is that historically that area has always been called Bohemia. And people know the Bohemian Revolution. They know the strong arts and culture that came out of that particular time period and that connection that it has to the Czech Republic and Slovakia. And that's what I wanted to bring up and start talking about this festival.
Well, Bohemia is it is a large area. It's an area of the Czech Republic. Czech Republic has two basically large areas, Moravia and Bohemia. But the Bohemians have always had that sort of imaginative, creative reputation, and sometimes a little bit. I remember my grandmother calling my grandfather a bohunk. I think she was mad at him when she did that.
It was not a compliment.
I don't think it was a compliment, no. No, not at that time. But they do have that reputation. And they have made quite a few contributions because they have been, I think, kind of an introspective country for so long that they have focused on the skills that were available to them. They didn't have television to distract them. They didn't have outside visitors to distract them very much. They didn't have very many outside influences, so they focused on art and the sciences. And those things all became contributions at a later point in time for the rest of us to enjoy.
Yeah. And there's that natural mountain border essentially wrapped around that part of the world. Now, let's talk a little bit about Miloš Forman being Czech. And a lot of people might recognize the name. What are some of the movies that he's really well known for?
Well, he's known for in the U.S. for several movies, but I'm going to ask Wayne to answer that. He's the expert on those on those Forman movies.
That I'm an expert, but I do want to make it clear that I have not one drop of Czech blood. So I'm
how
kind
did
of,
you get involved?
I'm
in Mr.
kind of
Murgler?
An imposter here. I think Frank heard that I had a gift of gab. And so he asked me to host this event. But as luck would have it, I do know Miloš Forman's American films for the most part. Probably the most famous ones are One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Amadeus and Ragtime, which was James Cagney's final film, which is a beautiful film, I think. But I have also seen Loves of a Blonde, which is one of his early Czech films that I believe it's the one that got him internationally recognized as a filmmaker. And the one that we're showing for the Czech Society is called Black Peter. And that was his, I believe, first film. Is that right, Frank?
I think that was his first film.
His first film. And he's a beautiful, beautiful filmmaker. I mean, if you watch a Miloš Forman film, at least his American films that I'm more familiar with, they're stunning to look at.
And Amadeus,
they're gorgeous films. Yes, yeah. And Amadeus was filmed in Prague, mm-hmm. which it's supposed to be, I think, Vienna, but who cares? but it is a beautiful film, and. And I also wanted to say, Jack was talking about Bohemia, and I've always had this fascination for Bohemia. And I think one of the reasons why a sort of flaky, hippie, weird type artsy people are called Bohemians is because Bohemia does have this reputation of being a little fey, I think the word would be, a little off-center, very artsy, very imaginative, mm-hmm. very creative, and a little weird.
Well, there was a famous Bohemian club in San Francisco where Jack London was a
yes.
member.
Yes. I don't know if it had anything to do with Bohemia or
but,
if it was
but
just,
they must have called it that for the reasons
right,
you're describing.
Because Bohemian, the word Bohemian has come to mean a little weird, but in a good way, a good
yeah,
kind of weird.
Weird.
Yes. And but yes, it's this evening of Milos Forman's film Black Peter should be a fascinating event, and there will also be, I believe, some samples of Czech cuisine there, and some Czech, is it beer or wine, or
I think it's Czech
doing?
Beer.
Czech beer, okay. And if, like me, you really don't have any Czech blood, you can pretend. It's like we're all Irish, you know,
yes.
on St. Patrick's Day. You can be Czech that evening. But I just think it's a very Bohemian thing, I think, to elect Václav Havel, to elect a writer, an artist for
and a
president.
Brilliant one.
I love that. And yes. The only other country I know of is Mario's Vargas Llosa. Do you know him? The,
yes.
The Latin American. He was president of his country, which I can't, is it Argentina or Peru? I can't remember what it was, but he was president for a while of his country. And he's a famously beloved novelist.
Yes.
And it would be like having Faulkner or Hemingway for our president, which I think would be really cool.
That would be very interesting. Faulkner has such long, convoluted sentences, and Hemingway has such short, staccato sentences.
And
so.
Frank's wife would definitely vote for him, I think. She's
yes.
a well-known Faulkner scholar.
That's
so.
True, isn't it? Well, I've always admired that about France, that they name all their streets and things after famous literary figures.
Yes.
That they do, that they do.
So there's no Donald Trump Avenue in France.
So let us know some of the logistics of this festival.
Yeah,
where will it be taking place and when? What are the dates and times?
Frank, mm-hmm. you know that
well,
best.
It is on September 29th from 7 to 9 is the time bracket. It's at the Anchorage Museum in the Rasmussen Center in the auditorium there. It's free. It's this is a an event which is hosted by the sponsored, I guess I should say properly, by the Czech Embassy and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Czech Republic. They have selected or acquired something like 20-something films directed by Milos Forman, and they've made those films available all across North America to the honorary consuls and the consulates, and that's their distribution system. And of course, since we have an honorary consulate in Alaska, I was able to get one of those films, and the one that we wanted to get was an early one of because we had thought a good many people have seen Director Forman's U.S. works. But I don't think there are very many people that have had the opportunity to see his early works and to understand a little bit about how those were produced, the circumstances under which films at that time in Czechoslovakia were produced. They were difficult times.
It was in the early 60s, was it, for him?
Well, this particular film was in 1963, and there had been a long tradition before that of filming already in the Czech Republic, and they have an area called Barrandov, which is, they've always compared themselves to Hollywood. It's like a Hollywood studio setup area where actors can live, and there are props and all the kinds of things that you expect to see in Hollywood if you tour Hollywood. Although back in those days, they did not have the technology that, of course, you have today. And they used a lot of lay people as actors. I guess that's the proper way to say it. Untrained actors, people off the street that would play parts. And they filmed at some of those gorgeous places you were talking about, Sandy, in mm-hmm. Prague. And so Prague has always been a favorite film venue, but they have had this, and they have an annual Karlovy Vary film festival. It predates World War II. Karlovy Vary is a spa. Carlsbad is what the Germans call it, and you probably hear that name more often than not, but its Czech name is Karlovy Vary. And it has mineral waters and different things, but probably the biggest event that goes on at Karlovy Vary is their annual film festival. And but if you can imagine making a film and trying to tell a story, which Miloš Forman is famous for doing, and having the communists look over your shoulder while you're telling it, I mean, I guess you'd be very, very careful how you did it. But he's a master at it, and so he knows how to do it, and he did it. Although, as Wayne knows, I think the first three films that he produced, Black Peter, Loves of a Blonde, and...
Fireman, one of them.
Oh, the Fireman's Ball.
Fireman's Ball. Yes. Mm-hmm. They were all banned by the communists.
Right. Is that right?
So this is a banned forum. I mean, banned by a government that's no longer around.
So the film is in Czechoslovakian with subtitles, I presume?
This is in Czech, the Czech language, with subtitles. But one of the things you'll find about these Czech movies, I think when you see, if you've seen others, you won't look at the subtitles as much as you would think you would. Mm-hmm. Of course, you won't understand the Czech language. It's a difficult Slavic language. But the stories are told through the characters and the settings, and you don't need those subtitles very much. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm explaining that correctly.
Like the power of film is in visuals. It's true.
Yes, exactly. Right.
And our common humanity. So.
One thing that I think a lot of people don't realize also is the importance of the Czech Republic in film today. So many of period films are filmed in the Czech Republic nowadays, and they've got a huge, that studio you were talking about, resources there. They'll build entire villages, build huge castles just to make films and TV productions. I don't know a lot of people know that.
I didn't know that. But we did find out a lot of things we now know about the Czech Republic that we didn't know before.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Thank you for the Crash Course Czech 101. And perhaps you could reiterate one more time what's coming up and the celebration.
This is the celebration of Miloš Forman's 80th birthday. It's a celebration which takes place primarily in September and October, but it's all over North America now. It's not just confined like it was for the first 2 years to the Washington, D.C. area. The distribution is through the consulates throughout North America. And his films will be shown all over North America in celebration of his 80th birthday.
And where can we see it here in Anchorage?
You can see it here in Anchorage without any cost to yourself at the Anchorage Museum on September 29th at 7 o'clock. You can come a little bit earlier if you want to and have some taste of Czech food and beer at the Muse restaurant and sit down in the theater. And Wayne will be here to have a question and answer period afterwards and to introduce the film.
It sounds wonderful. How do you say wonderful in Czech?
Výborně.
Výborně, a time on September 29th. All are invited, and you're all invited to join us again next month for another edition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler. And I particularly want to thank Jack Dalton for being here with us today, as well as Frank Nosek and Wayne Wergler.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thanks, Sandy.